Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us. You know, we eat right, we watch our weight, some of us, we work out, some of us, but that healthy lifestyle still may not protect you from certain genetic conditions. That's the case with a heart disease called hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, or HCM. And joining us now to talk about this condition is Dr. Shrihari Naidu, a nationally recognized interventional cardiologist and director of the hypertrophic cardiomyopathy program at Westchester Medical Center in New York. How are you this morning, Dr. Naidu?
I'm very well. Thank you for having me.
Is all that stuff on your card?
I think it is, actually.
Oh, my God.
I'm pretty low.
They have to do front and back for you, right? Well, thank you for joining us. Tell us, first of all, what is hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, or HCM?
Sure. So hypertrophic cardiomyopathy is a problem with the heart muscle. So unlike other heart diseases that we commonly think about, such as coronary disease or artery disease or atherosclerosis, this is a problem with the heart muscle itself, where it's genetically programmed to get thicker and thicker. The problem is it may start out very mild or not thick at all at birth, and then it really progressively happens during the teenage years and in the 20s, 30s, and 40s. So it's really progressive and slow, and patients may not realize that they have it because in the earlier years they may be very athletic and capable. But what happens over time is that it can cause a series of problems that can make quality of life really poor for these patients. Early in life, it can trigger certain arrhythmias, and in fact, it's the most common cause of sudden cardiac death in athletes. And later in life, it just causes a progressive debilitation of the heart, resulting in certain types of heart failure, and that results in shortness of breath, fatigue, palpitations, dizziness at times, passing out at times, and just, you know, just feeling like your heart can't get you where you want to go.
Now, is that common, and are there certain races, like in African-American race or the Asian race, that it's more prevalent?
So it is the same in all races, believe it or not, in all ethnicities. If you go to different countries, it turns out to be the same. It is actually very common. It's 1 out of 500. So if you think about that, that's actually more common than multiple sclerosis, 1 in 700. The reason we don't notice it is because in many people, it takes a while for it to really develop into a problem. And in fact, because of the low awareness, which is why we're here today, only 15% of people are diagnosed with the condition. 85% of people are running around not knowing they have it. If you think about it, that's a problem for a disease that can cause sudden cardiac death.
That is. So, you know, early on, later, teens, young adults, what should we be doing when we go to the doctor? I mean, I can't even begin to know where to start with that.
Sure. Well, let me actually answer one more of your questions. I know you mentioned about African Americans. There was a common misconception that it might be more common in African Americans. They may have thicker hearts to begin with. There are some race differences in the normal amount of thickness. And I think there's a connotation that African Americans may be more athletic or in certain sports. But the reality is that their risk of having this disease is the same as everybody else. It just might be that they are in the types of sports that put them at more risk. So I think I want to spell that out, especially for the station in that regard. It doesn't make them more likely to have it, but they may be at more risk of the consequences because of you know, other aspects of their life, such as other professional sports.
So talk about the symptoms, how, you know,
sure.
the diagnosis. How does that work?
Yeah, so the symptoms can be vague, but there are some symptoms that are very classic for it. So if people have a lot of lightheadedness or dizziness, and certainly if they're passing out, if they have a lot of palpitations, these are triggers for a further evaluation. Certainly, you might get shortness of breath or fatigue. And in the late stages of the disease, you may actually get swelling in the legs and other types of classic congestive heart failure symptoms. The diagnosis comes from really a high index of suspicion. Some people will have a heart murmur. That's very classic, a certain type of murmur. All these would prompt first an EKG by a cardiologist and then finally an echocardiogram. An echocardiogram is basically an ultrasound of the heart, and that will get very, very good views of the heart muscle, how it's working, how the valves are working. And if everything else is working but the heart looks too thick and we have certain measurements that qualify as too thick, that would indicate that you probably have this disease, and that would prompt a further workup.
Okay, so after that, say, you know, if you say, hey, you've got HCM, how is a condition treated? Is it curable?
Well, unfortunately, it's not curable. It's a genetic disease, which means you have it in all your cells. You can't get rid of all your heart, unfortunately, barring a heart transplant and things like that. So you'll always have it. It cannot be cured, and you can always pass it on to your kids. It travels as an autosomal dominant disorder, meaning that half of your kids will carry the gene. Then we have to watch them. Treatment is mainly revolving around the treatment of symptoms. All the symptoms I mentioned, there are certain medications that do help that, although none of them have really been tried and proven in this disease. Fortunately, there are some trials of drugs coming out in the future. There's one by a company called MyoKardia that has a new drug in development that we are hoping will really move the needle on this disease. There are also other procedures. For patients who have severe heart failure in their 40s, 50s, and 60s, there is a type of open heart surgery that can actually literally shave the muscle down to its normal size.
Wow.
But that does involve open heart surgery. And there's other minimally invasive versions of that, something called alcohol septal ablation that we do a lot of here at Westchester Medical Center, which is a way of doing the surgical approach through catheters instead. But unfortunately, there's no cure. And so a lot of it is lifestyle awareness and really counseling patients on how to stay healthy with it.
You just mentioned something. My next question is, how does that change a person's lifestyle?
That's a great question. So for people who have this disease, there are certain exercise limitations that we think will make it safer for them to live without sudden arrest, arrhythmia. And so one of the challenges is if people are heavy into exercise, certain types of high-level cardio exercise, that's pretty much not allowed in this disease.
Wow.
So a lot of the limitations have to do with that. The other things that we change in lifestyle, there are ways that a healthy lifestyle can help in terms of staying hydrated, avoiding caffeine, and avoiding alcohol. These are aspects that can minimize the symptoms of the disease if medications are not enough, or even before medications.
That is interesting. Is there a place where families, patients can go for more information?
Sure. There's lots of actual nice places nowadays. As awareness has increased, there's lots of educational outlets. One such outlet is the National Hypertrophic Cardiomyopathy Association based in New Jersey. They have a website called www.4hcm.org. In addition, just recently at the American College of Cardiology, Duke University unveiled an app on the iPhone called HCM Care.
Wow.
Patients can download that and get all those types of information, including much of what I just mentioned, on that app. And finally, if patients want to email our program, they can email us at hcmprogram@wmchealth.org.
I'm still back at, not really knowing that you have this disease until you get to a certain age. Can you go in and say, I'm having these symptoms? Can you test me for? And is that the proper thing to do?
If you're having these types of symptoms, I think, asking for a workup is very reasonable. Those types of symptoms are not normal that I mentioned. And so most cardiologists would move on to an echocardiogram. So I do want to make the point that people should be empowered to do that. If they're worried about some of these diseases, they have some of these symptoms, and they're not sure why they're feeling that way, you need an EKG, you need an echocardiogram, and then you need a cardiologist looking specifically for this disease as well as other diseases. But I think that mentioning HCM in particular can't hurt. It's certainly something that we as cardiologists sometimes miss as well. This is the reason why many of the patients I see have been seen by even cardiologists for the last 5 and 10 years, and oftentimes they've missed it too. So having patients be very educated and informed about these types of diseases makes a big deal.
So will we need to go beyond a regular cardiologist to an interventional cardiologist?
If you are diagnosed with a disease by your regular cardiologist, absolutely. Typically, we do recommend, and the American Heart Association also recommends through their national guidelines, that all HCM patients should also see a specialist in the disease. And that's because it affects so much. It affects your kids. There are genetic testing. There's advanced imaging. There's certain surgeries and procedures. There's some new trials, as I mentioned. None of those are really available to the regular cardiologist. They need to move on to a specialist who can really plug you in to all the tools at our disposal to really help your kids, your whole family, and improve your symptoms.
Absolutely, absolutely. Dr. Naidu, thank you so much for joining us and sharing this information.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure.